beneath the edges of my panties, sending chills over me and forcing Asa out of my head for a few seconds. "I wasn't thinking about sex with you," he says. "I was thinking more along the lines of what I could do for you." One of his hands slides around to my stomach and then up to my breast. His thumb brushes my nipple at the same time his tongue slides across my lips. He kisses me, deep, then pulls back just as I start to grow dizzy. "I'll be careful," he says. "My hands and mouth will do all the work, but I'll make sure the rest of me takes it easy, okay?" I know I should encourage his recovery, but every time he touches me, it calms me down, makes me less nervous. I need that right now. "Okay," I whisper. He smiles as he pulls off my shirt. Then he pushes me until my back is against the couch and he's hovering over me. His lips drag across my mouth, my neck, my breasts. His breath warms up every part of me while his hand works its way inside my panties. I open my eyes just as his fingers slip inside me. I moan, struggling to keep my eyes open, but he likes the eye contact. I like it too. It's new for me. In the past, with Asa, I've always kept my eyes shut tight because I never wanted to look at him. With Luke, I'm scared I'll miss something. I don't want to miss the way he looks at me, the way he responds to my noises. I love the eye contact. We only have to keep eye contact for 2 minutes, because that's all it takes for his touch to completely send me over the edge. As soon as I start shaking beneath him, he claims my mouth with his, swallowing his name as it flows from my lips. He kisses me until it's over, and then lowers himself until he's pressed against me. I can feel him bulging through his sweatpants, and it creates another need in me. "I think I'm better," he says, moving his hips against me. His voice is gravelly, needy, and it would be so easy just to push down his sweatpants and let him fill me. But I would feel terrible if something bad happened because we were too impatient to wait the recommended time. His heart may not be strong enough for that yet. "How about we compromise? One more week, and then we'll take it really slow." Luke groans against my neck, but pulls back. "One more week," he agrees. He sidles up to my side, pulling me against him. I'm facing him, my hands on his chest. I trace my fingers around his bandage. "I wonder what your scar will look like," I whisper. His hand meets my hair, and he runs his fingers through it, down my back, over my arm. "I don't know. I just hope you kiss it a lot." I laugh. "Don't worry. Once we're in the clear, you're going to have a hard time keeping my mouth off you. I like your body too much. I'm shallow like that, probably even shallower than you," I tease. He shakes his head with a grin. "Nah, the first thing that attracted me to you was your ass. I thought it was the drool on my chin when you woke me up in class that first day." He nods. "Yeah, you're right. It was definitely the slobber." I laugh. I love that he's able to make me laugh at a time like this. Our lips meet and we kiss for a solid 5 minutes until he starts to press into me again. I feel terrible that he's being tortured so much, but there's no way I'm allowing him to go against doctor's orders. I need him to be as healthy as he can as soon as he can. I push him away and try to change the subject to something that will help him recover. I decide to change the subject to his family. He finally opened up to me in the hospital about them. I like when he talks about his family because he only says positive things. I can't help but wonder what that's like, having a supportive mother. "Do you think you'll get to see your mother soon?" I ask him. I hate that we're in hiding right now because that means he can't see her until the next hearing is over, and Asa is hopefully behind bars. Of course, there's a chance he'll walk free again, but we don't talk about that possibility. "We'll see her when this is all over. She's going to love you for me." I smile, wondering what it'll be like to finally meet her. I start to think about my only family, Stephen, and then my smile fades. Luke notices because he runs the backs of his fingers over my cheek. What's wrong? I try to shake away his concern. Just thinking about Stephen, hoping he's safe during all this. I hate not being able to visit him. Luke's hand finds mine, and he slides his fingers through it. He's safe, Sloane. He has 24-hour security. You don't have to worry about him. I made sure of it. I hate that Asa has put us in this situation. A situation where I can't even see my brother. Luke can't even see his mother. We can't leave this apartment, and we have to have security for anyone we love. It isn't right. I hate Asa Jackson. I hate that I ever met him. I want him to pay for everything he's ever done, Luke. I can't look him in the eyes when I'm full of this much hatred. I want him to suffer in the worst possible way, and that makes me feel like such a terrible person. His lips meet my forehead, soft and gentle. He deserves to go to prison for the rest of his life, Sloane. You shouldn't feel guilty for wanting that. No, not that kind of revenge. Prison wouldn't affect him like it would most people. I want him to really hurt, to know that I don't return his psychotic, obsessive feelings in any way whatsoever. I want him to see how much I love you, just so he'll hurt as much as he's made everyone else in his life hurt. I want him to be forced to realize that I love you and would pick you over him. It would cut him to his core. Contemplation flashes in Luke's eyes as he stares down at me. If that makes you a bad person, then we're both evil, because I would give anything for him to have to suffer like that. His words make me smile, even though I still feel bad for wanting revenge. I guess when you're pushed far enough, revenge becomes the only thing that could help you move on. That's not healthy. I know that, and I'm sure Luke knows that. But realizing the difference between right and wrong doesn't change the way I feel. It just makes me feel guiltier that I feel this way. I tuck myself into him, but as soon as I do, we both stiffen. I sit up straight at the sound coming from the front door. Banging. Loud banging on the center of the apartment door. I immediately feel the terror. Luke is standing now. I don't even know when he jumped off the couch. He throws me my t-shirt, he moves across the living room and grabs his gun off the counter. More banging on the door. He motions for me to get up and come stand by him. I do. Who knows we're here? I ask him. Just Ryan, he says, walking to the front door. I follow him. He leans forward and looks through the peephole. He pulls back and presses his back to the wall by the door. It's Ryan. Thank God, I whisper. Luke doesn't move. His gun is still drawn and his eyes are boring into mine. What's wrong? Luke inhales a quick breath, then releases it. He's not scratching his neck.
49. Luke. Sloane's whole face drops. She knows mine and Ryan's nonverbal signal for when everything is safe, and she realizes now that everything is not safe. I glance at the peephole again, hoping I just missed the signal, but he's still not scratching his neck, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Why would he be here? Open the door, Luke, Ryan says. I know you're in there. Ryan is looking straight into the peephole, but I know him well enough to know that he's hoping I don't open the door. If Asa is behind this, why would Ryan lead him here? I look out the peephole again and I can see Ryan looking to his left, like he's listening to someone give him orders. Ryan inhales, then stares at the door again. He took Tilly. If you don't open the door, he'll let them kill her. He's the only one who knows where she is. Fuck, I whisper, dropping my head against the wall. Fuck. I can't believe Ryan would put Sloane in this situation. I can't believe he would bring him here. There has to be something else to this. Ryan would put his own life in danger before he would risk anyone else's. I glance over at Sloane and tears are pouring down her cheeks. Her eyes are wide with fear. I look out the door again just as Asa walks into the frame, pointing a gun against Ryan's head. Don't forget to tell him who else I have, Asa says, loud enough for me to hear him through the door. Ryan closes his eyes regretfully. Luke, he says. He has someone parked outside my little sister's house. I'm sorry, Luke. I'm so sorry. I close my eyes. Ryan's little sister is the one thing he would protect more than anyone in this world. It makes sense now, and the fact that Asa was smart enough to pull that off makes me scared for Sloane's life. I reach for my phone to dial 911. "If you call the police and have me arrested, they're both dead," Asa says. "Tilly, Ryan's sister, and Ryan. My guys have strict orders. I'm giving you 3 seconds to open this door." Sloane is crying hard now, shaking her head, begging me not to open the door. I take 2 steps until I'm standing right in front of her. I brush my thumb across my bottom lip and whisper, "I'm so sorry, Sloane." Then I grab her arm and pull her to me, press the gun against the side of her head, and open the door. Asa looks at Sloane first, then his eyes meet the gun I'm holding to her head. "Son of a bitch," he says. I back us both into the living room as Asa makes his way inside, holding the gun to Ryan's head. "Looks like we have a predicament," I shrug. "Not really. What you have of mine is disposable. What I have of yours is not." Sloane is shaking so hard against me and it fucking kills me that I'm doing this to her, but she knows she's the only bargaining tool we have to work with. He would never want her dead, so I hope she realizes that this may be our only way out of this. It's a risk, but we're out of options. Asa's eyes are hard on mine. "Let her go, Luke. I'll release Ryan. Sloane and I will leave and things can go back to how they're supposed to be." I'll never push her into Asa's arms, even if he has to kill me first. "Asa," I say, backing her away from him, "do you remember the last time we were locked up in a room together? You were very curious about the details of my first time with Sloane." He swallows hard. "You still interested in hearing about it?" Asa cocks his gun in a threatening gesture, pushing it beneath Ryan's chin, forcing his head up. I do the same to Sloane. It makes her cry even harder. Then I continue, hoping to throw him off his guard. "The first time I kissed her was in your bedroom," I say. "Right next to your bed."
"Shut your fucking filthy mouth, Luke," Asa yells. "I'll blow his brains out all over this apartment."
If you do that, you'll see exactly what Sloane looks like on the inside. He winces. I'm getting to him. "You think I care if she dies?" I ask. "There are a million more girls just like her, Asa. She doesn't mean shit to me. She got me closer to you, and that's all I ever cared about." Asa lowers his head until his eyes are narrowed in my direction.
"You think I believe that? I know you want to keep her all to yourself, or you wouldn't be here with her. Now tell me what it'll take for you to give her to me, alive."
"I can't do that yet. You're right, I don't want to give her up. I've only been able to fuck her once. She owes me a good fuck or two." Asa pops his neck. I can see his focus changing more to me and less on Ryan. I push him a little further, hoping I say something to make him lose the rest of his focus.
"You wanna know what it was like the first time I fucked her or not?"
"Last chance." Asa shakes his head.
"What I'd like is for you to hand me Sloane so we can move on with our lives."
"You were passed out in your bed upstairs." I can feel Sloane's tears and my heart is regretting every second of putting her through this, but I have no other choice. "She had just found out I was undercover. I was worried she was going to tell you, but I should have known better. Rather than running upstairs to save you, she gave herself to me in the back seat of my car." The blood is draining from his face. I force a smile. "She loved it, Asa. She loved knowing I was there to bring you down." I push Sloane forward a step, getting just a little bit closer to Asa, digging that knife in a little bit deeper. "How does that make you feel? Knowing it turned her on more to know that I was an undercover cop building a case against you than it did when she thought I was just another dealer like you." Asa's nostrils are flaring. He's staring at Sloane, hatred in his eyes.
"Is that true, baby?"
"Sloane is right. She's the only thing that can break him. I just hope she remembers that in the next few seconds." Her fear is forcing her chest to heave up and down, but then she finally whispers,
"It's true. And it was the best fucking orgasm of my life."
There's a split second when I can actually see her words breaking his heart, cracking his entire soul right down the middle. His eyebrows draw apart and he blows out a quick breath, refusing to believe the words she just spoke to him. That split second is all it takes to aim my gun in his direction. I pull the trigger, hitting him in the arm that's holding the gun. The second the bullet makes contact, Ryan breaks free and grabs Asa's gun, shooting him once in each leg to ensure he's immobile. Sloane is wrapped around me, one of my arms holding her tight while the other is aimed straight at Asa's head. My finger is around the trigger and it's taking everything in me not to shoot him, to end his fucking worthless life for good. Ryan can see it on my face. Don't do it, Luke. Asa falls to the floor and Ryan is on top of him, cuffing his arms behind his back. Where's Tilly? Ryan demands. Asa makes eye contact with him. He has 3 bullet wounds in his body, none of them necessarily life-threatening, but he has a solemn look on his face like he can't even feel the physical pain.
Fuck if I know.
Ryan reaches back and smashes the barrel of his gun across Asa's face. Blood splatters on the wall. He grabs Asa's phone out of his pocket and says,
You're going to call them off, right now. You're going to free Tilly and my sister, you piece of fucking shit.
Asa is staring up at him, laughing.
Your sister was a lucky guess, he says. Found her online, looked up her address. I don't even have people at her house, you gullible piece of shit. That picture I showed you was taken last night.
Ryan stares at him long and hard. He pulls his phone out and dials a number.
Are you okay? He pauses, then says, Tilly, are you okay? This isn't a joke, where are you?
Ryan closes his eyes, and then in a split second his gun smashes against Asa's head again.
You pathetic fuck!
He hangs up the phone and calls his sister.
Hey, he says, I'm sending police to your house, don't freak out, I just need to make sure you're okay.
When he hangs up the phone, he says, I'm sorry, Luke. There was no way I knew if he was lying or not. I couldn't take any chances.
I would have done the same thing.
Ryan makes sure Asa's cuffs are secured to the mantle and then walks toward the door.
I'll call the station and have this sorry fucker picked up. I'll show them up. Keep your gun on him until they come get him.
As soon as the door is shut, I pull Sloane to me, squeezing her, hugging her with everything in me. I hate that she had to go through all that just to get to this point. She must feel my apologies in the way I'm holding her because she kisses my neck and says, It's okay. I know you were doing what you had to do.
Get away from her, Asa grumbles.
He's handcuffed to the mantle, his jeans covered in the blood that's coming from his legs, but he still doesn't seem to care that he's been shot 3 times. He's staring at Sloane, rage in his eyes. I hold Sloane tighter so she'll feel safe. All I can think about is Sloane and how relieved I am that this fucker is definitely going to prison now. She'll feel safer, but she still won't feel vindicated.
50. Asa. Stupid cock fuck. His hands are on her, his lips in her hair. My stomach feels like someone went after it from the inside with a fucking machete. Every time he touches her, I can taste vomit. Get your hands off her, I demand. Sloane's eyes meet mine. She casually walks to the door and locks it, then walks back to Luke and presses her back to his chest. She pulls his arms around her waist. I don't want his hands off me, she says. My breathing is getting real fucking hard to control right now. She's acting like she actually fucking loves him. I've never hated something this much. If it took me going to church just so I could believe in a hell Luke would rot in, I'd never miss a fucking service. Luke's eyes are locked with mine as he presses another kiss into her hair. I fucking gag. Sloane, I say. My voice desperate. Baby, stop! Stop letting him touch you like that! You don't like it! I'm yanking my wrists so hard, attempting to break this mantle, they start to bleed from the cuffs cutting into my skin. She leans her head back until it's resting on Luke's shoulder, but she's still staring down at me. I hate you. I shake my head. Stop, Sloane! Don't talk like this to me, baby. You don't mean it. Every time I think about my first time with you, I throw up bile. It fucking burns my throat every time I think about how you took something so special from me and treated it like it was yours to do with as you pleased. Luke did this. He brainwashed her into believing that wasn't love. I feel stuff on my face. Wet shit. Tears. I'm gonna fucking kill him so slowly until he begs me to take his life. I hate you, Asa. I hate you so fucking much. When you would have sex with me, I would cry. When you would come to bed at night, I would pray that you didn't put your hands on me. When you kissed me, I wondered if death tasted better than you. She squeezes Luke's hand like she's silently thanking him. Or maybe silently telling him she loves him. What has he done to her? She glances over her shoulder and looks at him for reassurance. I can't breathe. My chest hurts. She wraps her arms around his neck. I love you, she lies to him. I bash my head against the mantel behind me as soon as I hear her saying those words to someone who isn't me. I love you too, baby. I bash my head again for the second time. Third time. I'll love you forever, Luke. Only you, she says to him, ripping my heart straight out of my chest. I want to die. I want to fucking die. Kill me, I whisper. Just fucking kill me. I hear sirens. God damn it. The last thing I want to do is live with these visions in a fucking prison. Fucking whore, I mutter. Then I scream. You fucking whore! Just kill me! Sloane presses her lips to Luke one more time, and then she turns and walks toward me. She bends down in front of me. I would reach out and strangle her, but I'm fairly certain I've lost too much blood to even lift my arms now. No one is going to kill you, Asa. For the rest of your life, every time you close your eyes in that prison cell, I want you to imagine the life I'm living with Luke. I want you to picture me making love to Luke, marrying Luke, having Luke's babies. She leans in closer until I can smell him on her. She's whispering when she looks me dead in the eyes and says, And every year on April 20th, my beautiful family will be celebrating your birthday with a big, huge, delicious coconut cake. You sorry fucking bastard. Luke unlocks the door, seconds before it's shoved open. Guns are drawn, pointed at me. But all I see is Sloane. The whore is fucking smiling, and it's all I see.
51. Luke. I unlock the door to our apartment and wait for Sloane to unlatch the deadbolts. All five of them. I hate that we have to be paranoid. I hate that I call her every hour just to check on her, even though I know she has 24/7 surveillance parked right across the street. I hate that we're the ones who are forced to hide, even though Asa is monitored and on house arrest until his trial, which will, without doubt, put him behind bars for a while. I don't know how the last couple of months have affected Sloane. I tried to talk her into seeing a therapist, but she insists she's fine. Or she says she will be once Asa is behind bars. There's no possible way for anyone to remove an ankle monitor without it notifying the police, so that's one small reassurance we have. If Asa does something stupid and decides to leave his house, we'll know within 90 seconds. But it isn't Asa I'm worried about. It's all the people he has on his side who will do his work for him. The judicial system in this country is fucked, to put it lightly. It feels like Sloane is the one being punished simply because people like Asa are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I keep telling myself that we're lucky he got house arrest. The judge could have allowed him to post bail and walk around free until he faces trial. We have that much on our side, at least. It hasn't been so bad until a few days ago because Asa was recovering from his gunshot wounds in the hospital for the past month. But now that we know he's healed and at home, with visitors free to come and go as they please, we don't feel as safe as we've been feeling. I attached the extra four deadbolts to the door yesterday for added protection. We're 2 hours away from him now, and no one outside the department knows where we're staying. It takes me over an hour just to drive home every day because I take so many side roads, just to ensure I'm not being followed. It's exhausting. but I'll do whatever it takes to keep her safe, short of walking through Asa's front door and putting a bullet in his forehead. I hear the deadbolts unlatch, and as soon as she begins to pull the door open, I slip inside and shut it. Sloane smiles and stands on her tiptoes to kiss me. I wrap an arm around her waist and kiss her back as I spin her to where I can reach the deadbolts and lock them. I try not to make it noticeable, because the more I worry, the more she worries. She pulls back as I'm latching the last deadbolt. I can see the concern flash in her eyes, so I redirect her. "Smells good," I say, glancing into the kitchen. "What are you cooking?" Sloane is an incredible cook, better than my own mother, but I'm not telling my mother that. She grins and grabs my hand, pulling me toward the kitchen. "I'm not sure, to be honest," she says. "Soup, but I just threw in what sounded good." She opens the pot and dips a spoon in, bringing it up to my mouth. "Taste it." I sip from the spoon. "Holy shit, that's delicious." She grins and puts the lid back on the soup. "I want it to simmer for a while, so you can't have any yet." I pull my keys and cell phone out of my pocket and toss them on the counter. Then I reach down to Sloane and grab her, lifting her up into my arms. "I can wait to eat," I say as I carry her to the bedroom. I toss her gently onto the bed and crawl up her body. "Did you have a good day?" I ask, planting a kiss to her neck. She nods. "I got an idea today. It might be dumb, though. I don't know." I roll onto my side and stare down at her. "What is it?" I place my hand on her stomach and inch her shirt up so I can touch skin. I can't get enough of her. I don't remember a time in my life that I've been with a girl I couldn't stop touching, even when we're just lying here having a simple conversation. I'm either tracing patterns over her stomach or up and down her arms or touching her lips with my fingers. She seems to like it because she's the same way, and I definitely don't mind. "You know how I can cook pretty much anything?" I nod. She really can. "I thought about compiling some of my best recipes and making a cookbook." "Sloane, that's a great idea." "There are so many cookbooks flooding the market, though, and I want something to stand out. I thought about playing up the fact that I learned to cook so well when I was practically forced to cook every night by Asa. I want the title to be something tragically funny, like Recipes I Learned to Cook While Living with My Asshole Controlling Ex-Boyfriend. And then I could donate half the proceeds to victims of domestic violence." I'm honestly not sure what to think. Part of me wants to laugh because she's right, a title like that would be catchy in a strange way. But part of me cringes that Asa is the reason she cooks so well. Because he was controlling and she had no choice. It reminds me of the first time I took her out to lunch and she acted like she'd never been to a restaurant before. "You think it's stupid," she says, falling back onto her pillow. I shake my head. "Sloane, no, I don't. It's a catchy title. It would make people look twice, that's for sure. I just hate that it's so accurate. It would be funny to me if it was a joke, but it isn't. That's really why you cook so well, and I fucking hate that son of a bitch for it." She forces a smile. "Thanks to you, that's not my life anymore." I constantly have to remind her that I didn't save her. "Thanks to you, that isn't your life anymore." She smiles again, but since the moment I walked through the front door, her smile has seemed forced. Something bigger is bothering her, and I don't know what it is. It could just be the stress of being locked in an apartment all day. "Are you okay, Sloane?" She waits a second too long to nod, which lets me know she's not okay. "What is it?" She sits up on the bed and begins scooting off it. "I'm fine, Luke. I need to stir the soup." I grab her arm to stop her. She stays at the foot of the bed but doesn't turn back to look at me. "Sloane." She sighs with her whole body. I release her arm and then join her at the foot of the bed. "Sloane, he can't leave his house, if that's what's bothering you. We'll know if he does, not to mention the surveillance outside. You're safe." She shakes her head, letting me know that's not why she's upset. She isn't crying, but I can tell by the small quiver in her lip that she's about to. "Is it your brother? We'll go see him this weekend. We'll go with an escort to make sure we're safe, and he's still got security outside his room." I tuck a strand of hair behind her ear, wanting her to know that I'm here. She's safe. Her brother is safe. She lowers her head even more and somehow folds in on herself, gripping her arms with her hands. "I think I might be pregnant." She didn't want to be in the bathroom while we waited the 2 minutes for the results. I stand here staring down at the stick, waiting. As soon as she told me she might be pregnant, it felt like I had failed her, like all that I've done to protect her was for nothing. She sat there with tears streaming down her cheeks, her head lowered and her voice barely above a whisper, and there wasn't anything I could say to take her fear away. I couldn't tell her not to worry because this is definitely something to worry about. We can do the math. She's been with both Asa and me in the last couple of months. The odds of it being mine are even slimmer than the odds of it being his, so if I were to tell her not to worry, I'd be lying. She said she takes birth control, so she doesn't know how this happened, but she lived with Asa. I wouldn't put it past him to have somehow messed with her birth control, hoping to get her pregnant so he would have yet another way of trapping her into staying with him. He's insane enough to do something like that. The last thing she needs right now is the stress of carrying part of that man inside her, something that would tie her to him for the rest of her life. The last thing she needs right now is the stress of caring for a baby, no matter whose it is. The next few months are crucial to her safety. She's going to be locked up inside this apartment waiting for the trial. Not to mention, once the trial begins, if she's pregnant, she'll have to testify on the stand near the time she would be due to give birth. I inhale slowly as I stare down at the test. It's the kind that doesn't show a line. It actually displays the words not pregnant or pregnant. I went to the store as soon as she told me. The last thing I want her to do is wonder. The sooner she knows, the quicker she can decide what she wants to do. I wait, my hands raking through my hair, my feet pacing the small bathroom. I'm facing the other direction when the timer on my phone chimes, indicating the wait time is up. I blow out a calming breath, and when I turn around and see the word pregnant, I make a fist, prepared to punch the wall, the door, anything. Instead, I punch the air and cuss under my breath because I know I'm going to have to walk out of this bathroom and break that girl's heart. I don't know if I can do it. I debate staying in here for another few minutes, just until I can shake off the anger. But I know she's out there, scared and probably even more nervous than I was. I open the door, but she isn't in the bedroom. I walk into the living room and she's in the kitchen stirring the soup again. It's been simmering for over an hour now, so I know she's just wasting time. She hears me, but she doesn't turn around to look at me. I walk into the kitchen, but she doesn't look up at me. She just continues stirring the soup, waiting for me to break the news to her. I can't. I open my mouth 3 times, but I can't find the words to tell her. I grip the back of my neck and watch her for a moment, waiting for her to look at me. When she refuses to look up, I close the distance between us. I wrap my arms around her from behind and pull her back to my chest. She stops stirring and she grips my arms that are wrapped around her. I can feel her whole body begin to shake with her quiet sobs. My silence is all the confirmation she needed. All I can do is hold her tighter and press a kiss into her hair. "I love you, Sloan," I whisper. She turns around and presses her face against my chest while she cries. I close my eyes and hold her. This isn't how it should be. This is not how a girl should feel when she finds out she's a mother. And I feel partly responsible for her sadness. I know we'll have time to talk about it later. We'll have time to discuss all of the options, but right now I just focus on her because I have no idea how incredibly difficult this must be for her.
"I'm so sorry, Luke,"
she says against my chest. I squeeze her tighter, confused as to why she's apologizing. "Why are you saying that? You have nothing to apologize for." She lifts her head, shaking it, looking up at me.
"You don't need this stress. You're doing everything you can to keep us safe, and now I've gone and made it even worse."
She pulls away from me and picks up the damn spoon and starts stirring again.
"I'm not going to put you through this," she says. "I'm not going to make you watch me carry a baby that you don't even know is yours or not. It isn't fair to you."
She sets the spoon down and grabs a napkin, dabbing it beneath her eyes. She turns and looks at me, her face full of shame.
"I'm sorry. I can..."
She swallows like the next words are too hard for her to get out.
"I can call tomorrow and see what I need to do to get it, to get an abortion."
I just stare at her, letting all of that soak in. She's apologizing to me? She thinks I'm the one who will be stressed by this? I take a step forward and slide my hands through her hair, lifting her gaze to mine. Another tear begins to roll down her cheek, so I wipe it away with my thumb. If there was a way we could find out this baby was mine, would you want to keep it? She winces and then shrugs, and then she nods.
Of course I would, Luke. The timing is shit, but that's not the baby's fault.
As much as I want to wrap my arms around her in this second, I continue to hold her face in my hands. And if you knew right now for a fact that this baby is Asa's, would you want to keep it? She doesn't respond for a moment, but then she shakes her head.
I wouldn't do that to you, Luke. It wouldn't be fair to you.
I'm not asking about me, I say, my voice firm. I'm asking you. If you knew this was Asa's baby, would you want to keep it? Another tear falls, and I let it roll down her cheek.
It's a baby, Luke,
she says quietly.
It's an innocent baby. But like I said, I wouldn't do that to you.
I pull her to me, and I kiss the side of her head and hold her there a moment. When I find the words I want to say to her, I pull back and force her to look at me again. I'm in love with you, Sloane. Madly in love with you. And this baby growing inside of you is half you. Do you know how lucky I would feel if you allowed me to love something that was a part of you? I lower my palm to her stomach and rest it there. This baby is mine, Sloane. It's yours. It's ours. And if your decision is to raise this baby, then I'm going to be the best damn father that ever walked the earth. I promise. She immediately brings her hands to her face and begins crying. She cries harder than I've ever seen her cry. I pick her up and I take her to our bedroom, where I lay her on the bed again. I pull her to me and I wait for her tears to subside. After several minutes, the room is quiet again. She's now lying with her head against my chest, her arm wrapped around me.
Luke,
she lifts her head and looks at me.
You're the best kind of human there is. And I love you so, so much.
I kiss her, twice. And then I lower my face to her stomach and I lift her shirt and I kiss her skin. And I smile, because she's giving me something I never even knew I wanted. And as much as I can hope this baby is mine and not Asa's, for Sloane's sake, it truly doesn't matter. It won't matter because this baby is part of the one person I love more than anything else. How lucky am I? I sidle up to her side again and kiss her cheek. She's not crying anymore. I brush the hair back from her forehead. Sloane, did you know that concrete pillars dissolve into donuts every time a clock falls off a turtle's head? She laughs hard, and her smile is huge.
Well, a victory isn't a victory if the empty room fills with dirty socks when the Christmas fruitcake is stale.
Our baby is going to have the strangest two parents in the whole world.
52. Asa. There was a case on the news recently about some dude who raped a girl. He got a few months in jail because he was white or because he won some medals or some shit combination like that. The whole fucking nation went nuts over it. Everywhere anyone looked, his lenient sentence was all anyone saw. It flooded the news for weeks. I don't know all the details of it, but it's not like the guy was a serial rapist. Pretty sure it was just his first or second offense, but everyone acted like he was motherfucking Hitler. Not that the stupid fuck didn't deserve whatever jail time he got, or an even longer sentence. I'm not defending the cocksucker. I'm just a little irritated that my case hasn't received one single goddamn second of national news coverage. I fucking murdered a guy, and didn't even get charged. I ran the biggest campus drug ring since college was invented, and didn't get charged. Even after holding a gun on Ryan, the judge releases me on house arrest until my trial. House arrest. 6 whole glorious months of it. It's a joke. This entire nation, and the racist fucking hypocrites who run it, are a joke. And guys like me are the ones who benefit from it. I would be ashamed of this country if I didn't love it so much for its lack of repercussions. And while we're on the subject of white dudes having non-consensual sex with chicks without repercussions, I'm pretty sure I don't even have enough fingers on both hands to count how many times I've been inside a girl without permission. Hell, I can't even count the times I was inside Jess without her actually wanting me there. In all honesty, that's one of the only reasons I even bothered with her. I liked how much she hated me. I just don't understand why I can get away with all that shit and no one makes a big fuss about it. I'm better looking than most of the dudes who get national media coverage. I'm also not a pussy, which most of them seem to be. What is it with pussy-ass, ugly dudes getting all the screen time? Is it because I don't come from wealth? That's probably it. I grew up an orphan with two piece-of-shit parents. The media knows people don't eat up stories like mine, simply because I don't have two privileged, rich parents by my side supporting me. Figures. My one chance at notoriety, and my parents are still fucking things up for me. Paul, my bitch-ass lawyer, tells me it's a good thing that the media hasn't picked up this story. He says when the media grabs hold of shit, they spin it a certain way, and the judge feels more compelled to hand down a stronger sentence. To make an example. Makes sense, I guess, but I'm not sure Paul realizes what an effect I have on people. I'm fucking charismatic. The media would love me. And then Sloane would be forced to follow the story because it would be on every news channel every time she turned on the TV. Fuck, I did it again. I let thoughts of her enter my head. I've been trying to listen to my psychiatrist, trying not to think about her. Every time I think about her, it feels like I'm an overweight old dude with sky-high cholesterol, dropping dead from a heart attack. Hand clenches my heart. Knees meet the ground. I choke on my own nerves, just thinking about what she did to me. My Sloane. It's my own fault. I should have known not to love something as much as I loved her. But I couldn't help it. It was like she was made for me. It was as if she was put on this earth to make up for all the shit I endured growing up. For a while, I thought she was God's apology to me. Like he pushed her straight down from the heavens, saying, "Here, Asa, I've created this ray of light to make up for all the darkness cast upon you by your parents. She is my gift to you, child. With her, your pain will vanish." And it did. For more than 2 years, I had my own little piece of heaven whenever I wanted it. Sloane was like Eve before the fucking serpent corrupted her. She was sweet and innocent. Untouched. My own little angel in human form. Until Luke. Luke is the Satan to my Eve. The serpent. Tempting her with his apple, introducing her to sin. Corrupting her. When I think of Sloane, which is every fucking second of every goddamn day, I think of the pre-Luke Sloane. The Sloane I loved. The Sloane who lit up like a Christmas tree any time I'd pay her even the smallest amount of attention. The Sloane who made me coconut cake and spaghetti and meatballs just because she knew it would make me smile. The Sloane who would sleep in my bed every night, waiting for me to come wake her up by making love to her. The Sloane who would express her love for me by caring for my house, like good women do. The women who aren't whores. I fucking loved watching her clean. She never complained about all the pigs who didn't respect my house. She would just clean up after them, because she knew how much I loved a presentable house. I miss her. I miss how much she loved to love me. I miss when she was innocent. My angel. My very own apology from God. But now, after falling for that fucking serpent, I want her dead. I want them both dead. If she's dead, I don't have to think about how she isn't the same person I fell in love with. If she's dead, I don't have to imagine the sounds she makes when she's being fucked by Luke. If she's dead, I can move past the hatred I have for this post-Luke version of Sloane that took over all the parts of her that I once loved. I've wondered, if I kill Luke, if he's out of the picture, can she change back to the Sloane I know is still there? Sometimes I think about giving her one last chance. Maybe if I were to kill Luke first and give her time to readjust to life with me again, I could learn to love her the way I used to love her. It's wishful thinking. He's been inside her. Not only her body, but her head. He's made her think that he's better than me, that he can offer her more than I can. I'm not sure I want to forgive her for being that fucking stupid. Her shine has worn off. She's a dull toy now. Damn shame. It won't be long, though. I've figured out where to get to them. It's just a matter of how. I lie back on the couch and close my eyes. I slip my hands in my boxers, wondering when I'll stop having to think about Sloane just to get off. Even hating her as much as I do, she's the only thought that can get my dick hard. I think about pre-Luke Sloane. I think about the first night I kissed her in that alley. I think about the fact that my lips were the first to ever touch hers. I think about how fresh and innocent she was. How fascinated with me she was. How she looked at me like she couldn't get enough. Like I was God himself. I miss the Sloane I fell in love with. Just when I'm getting nice and hard, someone knocks on my door. Fuck. I groan and pull my hands out of my pants. This dude has the shittiest timing. I stand up, wondering if the weight of the ankle bracelet will ever stop feeling foreign to me. I'm about to go fucking crazy. I can't wait to initiate my brilliant plan. I look through the peephole and then unlock the door to let Anthony in. He already knows not to say too much out loud. I'm not stupid. I know those fuckers probably have my house bugged. Hey, man, I say, grabbing the backpack from him. Hey, he says, glancing around like a paranoid twit. Found that coconut cake you were looking for? Coconut cake is code for computer. Bakery is code for Sloane. I refuse to use either of the two computers still left in my house. When the district attorney is trying to build a case against someone, they don't just leave their computers in their house. They confiscate them. The fact that both of my computers are still here proves they want me to search stuff because they're watching me. Just to piss them off, I've spent a good hour every day using the computers to search things like how to find redemption through Jesus Christ. I even click on church podcasts and let them play so they'll think I'm actually changing for the better. Hell, I took it so far that I created a Pinterest account. That's right. Asa Jackson has a Pinterest account. I pinned recipes and inspirational quotes for 3 hours straight just to confuse them. What a ridiculous fucking world this is. I take a seat at the dining room table and open the backpack. It took me a month to finally find a guy I knew wouldn't rat me out. I have too much information on him. He'd go to prison for life if he ratted me out. Besides, Anthony is desperate enough for easy money, he'd probably agree to kill Sloane and Luke for less than I paid him to get this laptop. The only downfall with Anthony is that it has taken him 4 fucking ever to finally pin down Sloane or Luke. He somehow found a guy who was able to locate an address for them. I didn't ask too many questions, because the less I knew about his methods, the better, in case they come back to bite me in the ass. But I'm almost positive there's a crooked fucker in Luke's department that spilled the beans for even less than Anthony demands from me. That's the thing about humans. We'll all do despicable things for money. Did you find the bakery? I ask him. He nods. Fucking hell. he found the fucking bakery. I went and checked it out myself, he smirks. You were right. That's a nice fucking bakery. I ignore the fact that it feels like my guts are lodged in my throat because he's telling me he saw Sloane, and I focus on the fact that I'm pretty sure he just said Sloane was hot. Who does this fucker think he is? What's so special about this bakery anyway? He asks, kicking back in his chair. He's wanting to know why I forked over a clean 10 grand for a computer and her address. Another 5 grand was promised if he was able to get some actual surveillance footage, proving that she actually lives at the address. That bakery is one of a kind, Anthony, I say as I pull the laptop out of the bag. Anthony wrote all the instructions down for how to access the surveillance footage he'll be uploading for me. Also in the bag is a Wi-Fi box set up in his name, so it's not traceable to me in any way. Did you get any cupcakes at the bakery? I ask him. Cupcakes is code for surveillance footage. We sound like two tools with all this baked goods talk, which is why I switched it up every time he comes over. Last week it was TV shows. He smirks again. Yeah, they're in the bag, he says, pulling out more sheets of paper from the backpack. He unfolds one and points to an email address and a password, letting me know that's where I can find all the footage. My pulse is raging inside me, and I'm trying to calm it down, but it feels like my heart is in the middle of a mosh pit. I want Anthony to leave so I can pull up the footage. I need to see her. It's been 3 months since I've been able to lay eyes on her. I need to fucking see her. I stand up and walk down the hallway to retrieve the money I owe him. I toss it on the table and point at the door, letting him know he's no longer needed today. He slides the envelope in his back pocket. Anything else you need? I can stop back by tomorrow. I shake my head. Nope. I'll let you know when I run out of cake. He grins and heads for the front door. I set up the Wi-Fi and log into the account. There's a message along with the email that links to the Dropbox. The message is from Anthony. Recorded about 8 hours of footage yesterday and cut it down to actual visual of the couple. Got a couple of minutes of some dude leaving and returning. Halfway through the footage, you'll see the girl take out the trash. End of the footage shows both of them. I'll record more this week. If you want, we can set it up on a live feed that you can access from this computer. Takes 2 seconds. Just let me know. I email him back before I even download the footage. Of course I fucking want live feed. Why the fuck are you just now telling me this? I hit send and then download. It takes almost 5 fucking minutes to download the video in the Dropbox. Once it's complete, I get up and lock the front door. I don't want any interruptions. I also make myself something to drink because my mouth is dry. I feel like puking, just thinking about seeing her for the first time in 3 months. I sit back down at the table and hit play. The video is 13 minutes long. 3 minutes is of Anthony just focusing his camera on the front door of their apartment. The angle is high, like he's filming from the second floor of the apartment complex. I knew wherever Luke and Sloane were staying, Luke would be extra paranoid. He's probably personally hired someone to make sure no one is watching the apartment while he's not there. I had Anthony rent out an empty apartment in the complex with a view of their front door, just so he could get good footage without being obvious by sitting in a parked car. At 3 minutes and 31 seconds into the video, the front door to their apartment opens. Luke walks out, glancing left, then right. I like that he's paranoid. I like that every time he opens the door to his apartment, he's thinking of me. Wondering if I'm there, ready to get my revenge. The film cuts out, and then back in. That's when I see it. The front door begins to open. I see her arm as she swings a trash bag out and onto the ground next to the front door. I barely get a glimpse of her hair as she slams the door shut again. It looked like she was trying to hide, like she fears she's being watched. She's scared to be there alone. Fucking Luke just leaves her there, all alone, probably for several hours a day. I don't care if he needs to work to pay their bills. If that were me and I was with Sloane, I'd find a way to protect her. If I knew there was a guy out there who posed a danger to her, she'd never leave my fucking sight. That's my first clue that he doesn't love her like I do. Like I did. I don't love her anymore. Do I? Fuck. I rewind the clip no less than 20 times, watching that arm as she swings the trash outside, watching her hair sway over her shoulder as she slams the door. My heart speeds up every time I watch it and slams to a stop every time the door closes. Fucking hell. I do. I still love her. I love her, and it's killing me that she's alone in that apartment, too scared to even open the door all the way. That stupid fucking bastard just leaves my Sloane all alone and scared while I'm locked in this stupid fucking house and can't get to her, thanks to him. I see you, baby, I whisper to the computer screen. Don't be scared. After a few more replays, I finally let the video continue. It skips forward to a few hours later. Luke's car pulls up in front of the complex. He gets out and opens the trunk. He begins to pull groceries out of the trunk. How cute. The motherfucker went grocery shopping for his fake little family. He walks them to the door and uses his key to unlock it. He tries to push it open, but it's still locked from the inside. Smart girl. Never trust a single lock. Sloane opens the door to let him in. Luke disappears inside the door as Sloane walks, no, she practically skips, to the car. She's smiling. She reaches into the trunk to grab some groceries when Luke walks back outside, holding up his hands. It looks like he's telling her to stop, that he'll get the groceries. He points at her, toward her stomach, and says something to make her laugh. She presses her hands against her stomach, and that's when I see it. That's when I fucking see it. I pause the screen. I stare at her hands pressed against her stomach. I look at the smile on her face as she stares down at her hands, holding her belly. It's barely noticeable under her shirt. Barely. Motherfucker. I'm frozen, counting days, months, trying to make sense of this. Motherfucker. I don't know a lot about the circle of life. The only time I ever knocked up a girl, I forced her to get an abortion because she wasn't Sloane. But one thing I know for a fact. It takes at least a few months for someone of Sloane's size to start showing. A few months ago, it was me who was inside her. It was me who was making love to her at night. Luke had her once during that time. I had her daily. Motherfucker, I say again, smiling. I can't help it. My whole face breaks out into a huge fucking grin. I stand up, needing to take a moment to breathe, to regain my bearings. For the first time in my life, I feel like I might pass out. Holy shit, I say, staring down at the laptop, paused on my Sloane. I'm gonna be a dad. I sit down again and rake my hands through my hair. I stare at the screen for so long, it starts to get blurry. Am I fucking crying? I wipe my eyes, and sure enough, there are tears on my hands. I can't stop fucking smiling. I zoom in on her stomach and then lift my hand to the screen. I place my right hand over both of hers, on top of her stomach. "Daddy loves you," I whisper to our baby. "Daddy's coming for you." I hope he's smart like me. I'm not sure if I got my intelligence from my mother or my father, because if you ask me, they're both a couple of ignorant fucks who somehow managed to only get one thing right during their combined years on this earth, my conception. I didn't know my grandparents, but sometimes I like to imagine my paternal grandfather, rest his soul, was a lot like me. They say things skip generations, so I probably looked a lot like him. I probably act a lot like he did. And like me, he's probably disappointed as fuck that his son, my father, turned out to be such a fucking twat. He's more than likely proud of me, though, and he's probably one of the few humans, dead or alive, who appreciate what a goddamn fucking genius I am. Let me explain. Ankle monitors. They're impossible to beat. You cut them, you get caught immediately. The fiber optic sensors inside of them will send an immediate signal as soon as they're tampered with, and the police will show up at your door within seconds. You can't just let the battery die, or the police will be notified. You can't possibly slip them off your foot, because feet don't bend the way wrists do, and God didn't take ankle monitors into consideration when he designed the human skeleton. The fucking selfish bastard. You can't leave the perimeter of where you're confined to, or the police will be notified. Hell, you can't even get drunk. Most ankle monitors come with sensors that periodically test alcohol levels in your skin. Not that I'm upset by that. I was never one to need alcohol. I enjoy it, but I can do without. Unless you're a tech geek with more knowledge than the tech geeks who invented the motherfucking ankle monitor, there's absolutely, without a doubt, no way to get around them without the police immediately being on your tail. Which sucks.